Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leap, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands, but if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leak. I'm your host, Mental Leak. Today we have a wonderful show for you. You don't hit a home run all the time, but I'm going to tell you, today I hit a home run. Today this show is a home run, and I won't say I hit it, but we have a brother that has the information that a lot of us is looking for. Many of us don't realize that relationships are the basis for community development. Well, self-development is the basis for that. But building strong relationships is how you build strong communities. So we look at the problems in our communities and we don't know what's going on. Well, it has a root, and it's a science to it. It's principles to it to making this right. And strong communities build strong nations. So when you look around this nation, you look at what's going on, and you look at the black nation in particular inside this country, like, we're in disarray. Well, we have the remedy for that today. And I know this brother is in a big, loud, boisterous brother, but he's a humble man. But not only is he humble, he's intelligent. Our guest today is Mr. Willie Muhammad. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Journey to Love You Desire Begins With You. Minister Muhammad is a New Orleans representative of Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And Minister Muhammad also works as a mentor and instructor to young black males in the community. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest, Minister Muhammad. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm fine, my God. I'm great, my brother. And I'm in the honor to be a guest on your show, man. I'm really honored to do that because, you know, in this day and time, so many people have access to the airwaves, the radio, or now internet, and not everybody's trying to bring something to our community that's beneficial and constructive rather than destructive.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. And, you know, doing my best to be a servant to the people and make sure we can get the information out so we can't say we haven't heard. Minister, can you go ahead and give us a little background about yourself and about Baton Rouge? What's going on down there?
Well, you know, I'm actually from New Orleans, so New Orleans is about an hour or so away from Baton Rouge, but I'm a New Orleans native. I've been a member of the Nation of Islam since 1994, and been a minister in the Nation of Islam since about 2003, I think, right around that time. And you know, brother, I just strive to do my best to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and to serve our community, and to even serve the believers, man, and I try to take what I hear from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and make it flesh, you know, and that's what something that the minister said he wants to see more of us do. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really passionate about, as you were talking about, is so critical, is relationships, which also lead to families and marriages. And, you know, as we're taught as students of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, there were three sciences that the enemy prevented us or denied us from having access to: science of business, science of warfare, and the science of mating, right? So I think in addition to trying to do all of the other stuff to heal our community, we have to begin to start understanding the process and the methods that we can use to help make the right decision to who the person we want to be our mate.
Right. 100%. So what motivated you to write the book?
That's a good question. My personal life, man, really. My personal life. You know, my father left my mother when I was at the age of 12. So from 12 years of age to about 18, 19, I lived my life chasing a false understanding of manhood. And a part of that false understanding of manhood was the manipulation of women and the disrespect of females, right? And so it wasn't until I entered into the Nation of Islam that I began to start really learning about the true value of the black woman and the importance of family and the importance of marriage. Like I mentioned in my book, I grew up where all of my relatives were, they were not with the person, were and still are now, not with the person who they gave birth to someone's children for, or who, or the person that gave birth to their children. And as a teenager, I looked at that, and nobody came up to me and told me this, but I just said, man, it must not be meant for marriage doesn't run in our family. So it wasn't until I came into the Nation that I began to start getting pushback from what I was learning of that. And from my analyzation of my own mistakes and my own thinking, and from my conversations with people, people would say, man, you really should write a book about relationships. So I did just that. And people who read the little small book, you know, they have told me how powerful or impactful it is. And some people have told me that, you know, it put them in such a battle that they had to be honest with themselves and say that they were not ready to walk through that door. And I say that in the book, that if you find yourself fighting against what's being said in this book, just put it down. You're not ready yet, and come back when you're ready.
Right. Well, this book, as I've read it, is a great manual for self-reflection, self-education, and re-education. We've been trained to believe in a certain way. In this society, especially in the black community, we are trained, just like you said, to believe, you know what, love doesn't work. And that's just not true. That's what we've been trained to believe, which is contributing to the destruction of our community. So I'm going to go ahead and get right into the questions. So obviously, based on what we said so far, we can see that we're failing at relationships and love. And we want to talk about why. So based on your study and based on the knowledge you have, as I said, based on what I've read in this book, I see you as an expert in this area. Why are we failing at relationships?
Well, I would say, one, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan mentions in the book Torch Light for America, when he talks about fixing relationships, he says one of the reasons why we're struggling in relationships as black men and women is because we've been disconnected from the greater, disconnected from the person we should have our number one relationship with, which is God, right? And so, you know, the institution of marriage and even the design. Is that, you hear the echo, or is that just me?
I'm not hearing the echo on my end.
Okay, maybe it's just me. What the minister says, he says that we're separated from God. And the whole institution, the whole idea, the basis of the attraction between man and woman comes out of the mindset of God, right? So in that disconnection from God, we're also disconnected from ourselves, because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, when you know yourself, is you know God as well. And so the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave an analogy using the principle of mathematics, multiplication. He said, if you want to have a relationship that the quality of that relationship can be said, it's a 10, right? He said, but you are a 2. So in multiplication, if you are a 2, and you want to have a 10 in a relationship, then you know you would need to multiply that 2 times a 5. And so what the minister said is that, but if you don't know you're a 2, then you might multiply that yourself against something that's larger than the number that you need to get you to a 10, or lower than the number that we need to get us to a 10, right? And so the minister was illustrating a point to say how important it is for us to have a knowledge of ourselves. And that's one of the reasons. And knowledge itself is important. I always use this analogy or this example coming from the movie Ice Age from Disney, one of the Disney films. And in the movie, the world was coming to an end, and you had all of these animals. But you had this they call it the ancestor of an elephant. It's a mammoth, right? So all of these other animals were running and joining on with their own kind. But this male mammoth, he was saddened with grief and sorrow because he didn't see one of his own that he can mate with. So he was pondering how his species were going to be extinct. And as the movie proceeded on, he saw a female mammoth that came, but the female mammoth did not see herself as a mammoth. She saw herself as like a possum. She would actually sleep and behave like a possum. So here at the time when the end of the world was about to take place, here this male mammoth who knew who he was realized that, listen, I need to mate. We need to get together and mate to prolong our species. He ran into difficulty because he saw a woman who didn't see herself as being a mammoth. And I relate that back to us, not as us being elephants, but as us lacking the knowledge of ourselves. As historically, you know, we don't understand, most of us, what happens to us. But even when we get past the historical point, we just get to understanding who we are as a person, right? How most of us, we enter into relationships not even doing a significant or meaningful assessment of our strength in the areas that we need to work on our likes and our dislikes. And sometimes we bring the person that we bring into a relationship is not even our own authentic self. I have a YouTube video on my channel, which is How to Get the Love You Desire, and I talk about the importance of being our authentic self. You know, you have people who would run from buying a knockoff Gucci bag or a pair of knockoff Air Jordans or knockoff Ralph Lauren shirt because they say, oh, man, that's fake. It doesn't have the same quality. But here we would shun those knockoff material items, but we bring a knockoff version of ourselves into a relationship. And then what happens when a trial of trying to merge with a brother or sister in a relationship comes, then when our true self comes out, the person feels deceived and feel betrayed because they're like, man, who is this person? So that's some of the reasons I would also say why we're in this position.
That's a very beautiful point. Well, let's keep on the journey of talking about love. I think that we need to be able to define it. And what I see is that a lot of people, we see love as some tender emotion, you know what I mean? And in my opinion, I don't believe it can be because it's not working out. If it's just this tender emotion, we've been tricked. But we don't understand it well enough because it's not working out for us. What we say is love is very fickle because it's with us today and tomorrow, you know? So how would you define love? And I can show that definition right and exact.
Wow. You know, brother, the best definition that I have heard of love, which really made it make sense to me, and it wasn't in this, like, you know, this romanticized, mystical type of existence of it, was the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan when he taught on the lecture, and he said that love is duty. You know, so when he said that that love is in aspects of the English language, it is described as a verb. So love is action. You know, we can tell what someone loves and what they don't love by the actions that we take toward this object that we say we love. So when we love someone, you know, it will be reflected in what we say out of our mouths and also what we say in our actions, right? In our lessons as for members of the Nation of Islam, for those who may be listening who are not, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was given lessons by his teacher, Master Farah Muhammad, and he tells him the importance of speaking grammatically correct language. And the minister has used an example about how in this field of English, what's considered to be improper or incorrect grammatical usage of the language is when there's no subject and verb agreement, right? Like you can have, I'm thinking about a sentence, like it may say, I gone to the store. I am present, but the verb that's being used is not, right? The verb is not in the right tense. So what I mean by that and relates to love is when somebody really loves someone, you see it in regards to what they say out of their mouths matches their actions. So to love is action and love is duty. And the way that we build and endear someone to love us is really by what we do.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it just made me think of the Bible and how the Bible says God is love.
Mm.
You know, and God is love. And as you said earlier, God should be at the center of all our relationships. But if God is love, then a tender emotion can only be an aspect of love.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and think about that. And God being love, and what really makes people love God? Because of what he has done. You know, Christians will say he sent Jesus. You know, Muslims will say because he revealed the Quran to Prophet Muhammad. You know, people who are spiritualists will say because this universe that he created. But it's what he has done, you know?
Right. That's exactly true. It's because of what he has done. All right. So in the book, you mentioned we go into relationships without examining the impact, the relationship we've had with our parents and how that relationship has influenced our behavior. What's a good reason for why we should examine this, and why should we discuss this with our partner?
Well, you know, there's a saying, I think we titled that chapter, the fruit doesn't fall too far from the tree. You know,
right.
As one of the reasons why is because our first live and in color example of a relationship of how man and woman should interact comes from our parents. The people that shape how we begin to view the world and view ourselves is our parents, right? And so that impacts us. I was watching this reality show called Marriage Builders or something like that. Marriage Boot Camp, that's what it was. And they did a very interesting activity with the participants in this reality show. They put all of them in a cage. And one by one, they called each of them out, and they told them the only way you're going to be released from this cage if you are honest about the person in your life that you need to forgive. Now, all of these people in this reality show are married to one another. But when it came time for them to forgive a person that who did them something that they felt was wrong, that they hadn't forgiven in their lives, nearly all of them never talked about the person that they needed to forgive was not the person that was in their husband or their wife. Most of them were crying as they were reliving experiences with their father and their mother. But those experiences impacted them in their current relationship. So that's important. And sometimes, oftentimes, many of us haven't even sat down to see what positive or even what negative impact our parents have had on us, be it intentionally or unintentionally. And in my book, I give examples from research where I researched where they talked about, like, the impact of a sister who was raised by a father who wasn't present, the impact of a brother who was raised by a mother who may have been over-aggressive and stunting his growth in development as a man. And it's very significant. I'll close on this point. You know, in the book I mentioned how a researcher showed that how many young girls who don't have a relationship with their father growing up, some of them begin to start experiencing their menstrual cycles earlier. So if that biological impact can be done on a child, a teenage girl, then what about the social and emotional and psychological impact that the absence of a father or the improper relationship that a father has? If you look at Jay-Z and look at his interview prior to marrying Beyonce, one of the turning points in his life that I think prepared him to be ready for a relationship was when he healed his relationship with his father.
Right. And that was actually, you actually went right into what my next question was. I wanted to get a little deeper into the daughter-father relationship, mother-son, father-son. I want to talk about negative aspects of what we see and what we don't deal with and how it affects us, and then the positive aspects. I was raised by my father. He you know, and my father, he was there, you know what I mean? He was with us every step of the way, but I didn't have my mother, you know. So if we could just speak to that to a degree and how that affects us in the positive and negative, the positive relationship and how we can make those negative relationships positive. I know that's loaded, Blair, if we can hit all those aspects.
It's needed. And, you know, from the positive standpoint of it, you know, I've seen that brothers and even sisters who grow up and they have strong relationships with their parents, especially at their fathers, I've seen them to be, they are more secure than themselves. They're more confident in themselves, right? They're less likely to be followers because they've had a supporting father, a supporting mother there that was always encouraging them on and building their self-esteem. You know, they're able to take criticism to a greater degree, right? So what that does is when they enter into a relationship, they enter to most of the time secure in who they are, right? The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that to have a father and a mother is a need of a child. You know, he said a need. That means that when it's not there, then that's a need that hasn't been fulfilled if we don't address it. And the negative impact that it begins to start having is that, you know, they have found that, I read an article, they said that some of the brothers who've been in prison, and they've been in prison because of, they've been in prison for rape, and they said that they've noticed that those who are in prison for rape, many of them had an improper relationship or no relationship with their father, right? And as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, he said if a sister, you know, has been done wrong by her father, then that taints her ability to view men properly if she doesn't begin to start doing that healing, right? And so you find women who grew up in a home where a father was emotionally absent. Studies show that they actually begin to start pursuing men who are emotionally absent just like their fathers. So that's why in the book I encourage everybody to sit down with themselves. As you can bear witness, the book that I have is not telling us to focus on anybody else outside of ourselves. It's teaching us to do the work that we need to do on ourselves. So I'm asking people to go into that book and think about the aspect of the hurt or even the joy that they had with their father and their mother and begin to start healing. You know, we can't go back and recapture that relationship or have recapture moments of them taking us to the park, but we can heal. We can, if our parents are still alive, go to them and have this discussion and say, you know, this hurt me, what you did, and it impacted me this way, and it made me this type of person. And it'd be painful discussion, but then begin to start doing the healing process. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, the process of atonement can bring any marriage back from death. So if the process of atonement can do that for a marriage, then what can it also do for relationships, fractured relationships between parents? So the minister, by God's grace, has given us an opportunity by which we can make ourselves whole again and begin to start healing.
Well, what are some of the things that we can do to heal? I mean, we can't go back and unscramble those eggs. You know, we can't go back to that history. That's our history. It's a part of us. But what can we do to heal and use that part of our history as a positive?
I would say first, acknowledge the impact that the lack of a relationship with our father, our mother has had on us. First, acknowledge it. And be, you know, to be honest with ourselves and say it has impacted me, because when we do that, that opens up for healing, right? I think about, like, for example, give you this analogy, and it can be found in the lessons. Imagine you're from Illinois. I've never been to the part. What part? You say what part again?
DeKalb.
I can't hear you.
DeKalb.
DeKalb. Now imagine if I've never been there, and I come there. And I give you a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I say, "Hey, man, I need you, brother. But I need you to come and get me." And you was like, "Yeah, man, brother, where you at?" And when you trying to get the location, I tell you, "I don't want to tell you." And you were like, then if I don't want to tell you, then you can't help me. You can't come and get me because you don't know where I am. And why do I use that analogy? When we're not honest about where we've been affected and where we've been hurt, then we can't get the help that we need because nobody can help us where we need to be. No one can help us where we need to get the help from. You see my point? Like, for example, if somebody's not honest about how their lack of their relationship with their father or their mother impacted them, then how can somebody point them to a source or resource that can help them? So I would say first, be honest about the impact that it has had on us. Two, sit down and see specifically how what happened in the past and how it is impacting us today. Three, if our parents are still alive, try to have that conversation with them and say, you know, you may not know, but when you did this, this, and this, this is how it helped. It impacted me. Now, if they are no longer there, then we just take it to God and we just say, you know, this impacted me. Now I want to begin to start healing from it. And begin to, you know, talk about it. Think about the lessons that it learned. And look into that painful experience and say, what lesson did I learn from that? And, you know, even the negative experiences that we've had with our parents, there's a positive that came out of that as well, because sometimes those experiences make us stronger in some type of way. So we got to look at it and see. But I would say be honest about it and begin to start doing the healing. I'm a firm believer in encouraging people to go research stuff. Like, you know, you can go Google an article, how to heal my fractured relationship with my father or with my mother, and see what advice is out there. And if it's good, begin to start practicing it, you know?
Right. Makes a lot of sense. And you're just walking right into every question I have. Now, in your book, you said that to prepare yourself for your wife, what you did was what you call a self-assessment. So if you can tell those listeners what it consists of and why we should do a self-assessment.
Is because it helps us to begin to start understanding that we have played a role either passively, I guess the other word is aggressively, in the failure of past relationships. And see, a lot of times we enter into relationships still blaming the failure of previous relationships on other people and not accepting the role that we play, right? So what begins to happen is when we don't accept the role that we played in previous relationships, guess what? We bring that same behavior into the next relationship. You see? So what I had to do was sit down, wrote down, like I talk about it in my book, all of my past relationships. I wrote down how they ended, why they ended, and then I also wrote down what role did I play in causing them to end, meaning what did I do or even what didn't I do. Because some people focus on, I did this, or I did that. But sometimes we contribute to the failure of our relationships by what we didn't do. And sometimes stuff that we don't do is like not standing up for ourselves and asserting our value in our relationship, not demanding respect, not demanding proper treatment. And oftentimes when we look at that, when we are in a relationship and we don't demand proper treatment and proper respect, at the root of that is that we don't see ourselves as valuable. Because whatever we see as valuable, we always make sure that others are going to have to treat it in a valuable way as well. None of us will let somebody come up and just begin to start taking a brick. And if they say, I'm going to take this brick, I'm going to bust out the windows of your car. We wouldn't let them do that because we know, man, that car is valuable to me. So that's the same thing. Why should we accept treatment that's below what we should be treated if we really value ourselves? So when I sat down and looked through all of those past relationships, I had to ask myself, is this still in me? And if it was a negative quality, then I had to begin to start. I had to acknowledge that it was still in me. I had to do some soul searching to see where it came from, and then I had to heal. I had to heal from it. And that's the thing, you know, man, because sometimes, like, we can have you know, I know a brother who because of a, I'll tell you this, I know a brother who because of something that he misinterpreted that his mother said, right? His mother passed. And as a child, all he could remember was when his mother told him, I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to leave you. But then when his mother died, when his mother passed in transition, right, he developed a bitterness toward his mom because he felt like his mom lied to him. And as he began to take time to go back into that experience, he realized that that reoccurring voice in his head about his mama saying, I'm not going to leave you, I'm not going to leave you, she told him that when she was on her deathbed. And what she was basically saying, how many of our people speak about the afterlife, that I'm going to always be there for you. But he said that simple misunderstanding of what his mother told him caused him to, every relationship that he would be in, he sabotaged it because he felt like eventually they were going to leave him like his mother left him. So, you know, as we're taught, you know, in the Nation of Islam, we're taught about the value of history. And we look at that just dealing with what happened to us as black people and, you know, with things like that. But also, what about our own personal history? Like, you can't fix anything if you don't know its past history. Like, if your cell phone starts malfunctioning, if your car starts malfunctioning, if you have a health challenge, when you go to the doctor, when you go to that cell phone technician, when you go to the mechanic, they ask, well, what was it doing before you brought it in? What is your medical history? Because they understand that you can't fix what's in the present if you don't address what's in the past. How does that apply to relationships too?
In the book, you say that when you're talking about the self-assessment, you talk about guilt and how you felt guilt when you started to re-examine your past, which I felt the same way when I took a point in time about a year or two ago and I had to re-examine what I had done and what I was no longer doing, but how I had affected others. And so when you do that, how do you get out of that guilt? What do you do to work that guilt off?
You know, I think I mentioned in the book, you know, when I came across some people I was in a past relationship with, I apologized. And for those people who I never came across again, I had to personally admit to myself that I was wrong. And then I said, I was wrong, oh Allah, forgive me, you know, my personal. So like we say in our prayer, you know, I confess my faults, right?
Right.
And talk about going to a light. Do you know, when we say, confession is good for the soul and stuff like that, I heard this preacher say that the word confession, the Hebrew word that it comes from, it doesn't really mean just verbally saying, you know, what we did wrong. He said it comes from a word that basically means that now I have come to an agreement and I agree that what I did was wrong. You know, because some people can confess, you know, hey, I did this, but in their hearts, they still don't really agree that their action was wrong. You get my point? So the thing is, like, you know, if we can come into contact with those people, just apologize. You know, I know, hey, when I was in high school, I did this. But I apologize for whatever pain I caused you. And if we can't see, if we don't see them again, just personally in our mind, admit to it. You know, I apologize. I believe in sometimes doing some type of ritualistic stuff, like, you know, write down in a journal, man. Look, I apologize when I did this to such and such. And write it all down, get it all out on paper, and then ask Allah for forgiveness. And then after that, get a match and burn it on fire, man, and start anew, you know.
Sometimes we don't realize that holding that in, you know, that burden or that guilt can weigh you down. You know what I mean? It really holds you back. But when you are able to let that go, like you said, burn it, symbolically burn that, write it, you need to do to atone, and I'll be forgiven. And forgive yourself, more importantly, because you may never earn the forgiveness of a certain individual. You got to make sure
exactly.
that you turn from that way that you were, and you're able to forgive
mm-hmm.
yourself. And once you do that, life has wonders for you.
That's it. And you know, and it's so key that we actually make that atonement with ourselves and with God, right? Because when we do somebody else wrong, we really are really doing making an offense toward God. Because you know, the scripture says, how can you say you love God whom you have never seen, but hate your brother whom you see every day? So when we can't meet those people, we just go to God and say, forgive me. You know, and Allah says in the Quran that his forgiveness is as vast as the planet Earth. So we just go to him and see what happens when we don't do that, like you said, that guilt. You know, that's what Pharaoh was tripping off of, because the dirt that he did to Hebrew children, because instead of taking the process of atonement or admitting his wrong, he would see their growing and multiplying as, oh, they're going to come and do something back to me, evil. When if all he had to do was to apologize for what he did them, start treating them right, and all of that would have been wiped away. And he wouldn't have to walk around with guilt in his mind. That's the same thing with us.
Man, it's another topic for another time. But that's actually what we're seeing today. So many problems today.
Oh, that's definitely it. And you know, another sign is when we really have repented for what we do. So imagine if somebody, a brother in the Nation of Islam, a sister in the Nation of Islam, they start courting, or a brother in the church, or, you know, whatever they may be, and they have this new interest. And when this new interest asks them about the failure of previous relationships, that they honestly tell this new person why that relationship failed, where they're no longer blaming the other person and not talking about what they did to contribute in the wrong that they did. You see, so, and we're being able to admit that, you know, I made a mistake with this person. I've learned from it. And once we have that, we can learn from that mistake, and it puts us in a better position to do, to be who we are. And I think one of the major reasons why I've been blessed to be in a successful relationship and marriage that I'm in right now is because this is probably the first time that I actually approached a relationship with a sincere intention and a sincere motive, and I did work on myself. You know, like in the Bible when it says, Jesus says this, he says, how can you look at the splinter in your brother's eye, but you got a plank in your own eye, right? And if you ever had anything like a piece of eyelash or hair or whatever, dirt, fly in your eye, you can't really see anything because you're so busy trying to get it out your own eye, right? And so imagine if somebody has a plank in their eye, to what degree does that impact their ability to see things? So that's why I like the principle of my book is based upon self-improvement, because the more work we do on ourselves, the clearer we will see and understand others and the environment in which we are in, and the clearer we will see ourselves.
Right. That's true. Before I go to my next question, I want to go back. Somebody sent me a text message and asked, can we talk more about the father-son relationship? I mean, the mother-son relationship. Because in the black community, there's not a lot of fathers at home. So how can mothers prepare their sons to be in better relationships?
One of the things that mothers have to do is this, and mothers have to be very careful about this, because I've seen mothers that make this mistake. In this day and age, especially when black boys are being killed by law enforcement and even our own kind, sometimes mothers, out of their love and their capacity to love, sometimes mothers shield their sons in such a degree that prevents their sons from growing up to be real men. Sometimes mothers baby their sons, right? And they end up making their son into the type of man that they would want. A man that, like I teach in the school system, and I see young brothers who may get all F's on their report cards, but the mama still rewards them, right? So as a mother, they have to be able to understand to teach their son to teach their son by what they say and by how they handle themselves, why women should be valuable, right? Why women are valuable,
right.
Why they should be seen as that. And what they also need to do is when it gets to that age, connect their sons to male members that they know who exemplify what they would like their son to be, right? And also, a thing that I would tell them, no matter how bitter the relationship may be between them and the father, refrain from tearing down your father, your son's father, in front of him. You shouldn't do it at all, because you have young brothers who grow up and hear their mama tell them, you ain't going to be nothing just like your daddy. Or they may say, if they don't say that, they may say, your pa ain't nothing. Well, if my pa is nothing and I come from my pa, then that means part of me is nothing, right? So those are some of the things they have to do. You know, don't and they should hug your son, embrace your son, tell him how much you love him, build him up, but also be firm. Don't give him, don't reward him for something that he's not doing. And in my book, it talks about some of those relationships that that can happen when a mother, between a mother and a father, a mother and a son, right? If a mother allows a son to disrespect her, then chances are it's just training for him when he gets older that he's going to disrespect other women. Because if he can disrespect his mama, then no other woman stands a chance.
Let's say the same thing for mothers with daughters. What is the best way for a mother to raise her daughter in a successful way?
I think in regards to helping her to understand that her value is not attached to her physical features, is not attached to the size of her breast or the size of her behind, right? To let her know to be mindful that her daughter doesn't get caught up in this image that puts so much value on physical features, but not the stuff that really is of real value, which is your character. And I think as a mother, to do all that she possibly can to instill in her daughter a healthy view and a healthy love of self. Because of a young girl growing up who loves herself, she's not going to tolerate stuff where people treat her less than who she is, right? And I have daughters, brother, and I want, you know this thing, I don't want my daughters to grow up where they feel like if a man leaves them, the world is coming to an end. So there's a part of our daughters that we want to build where they are strong and they have this spirit of independence, but, you know, we don't want to develop in our daughters the spirit of, I don't need no man. You know, that type of mindset. So we got to be careful about that, because one of the things why some sisters are not able to attract men is because they're presenting their spirit like they don't need a man. So, and men want to feel needed. And if a man doesn't feel like you need him, then why should he even try to be a man in your life?
Very true. You still there, brother?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So when you are looking to marry or you're courting, do you think it's wise to be around other married couples?
Or man, those almost. Man, I would say, like it says in our lessons, emphatically yes. And let me tell you something, man. That's one of the mistakes that I'm starting to see that people are making now. You know, now we're beginning to put, I'm saying the Nation of Islam, we'll start there first. Some of us are beginning to start taking the courtship process. It's just the Islamic way of saying I got a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And we want to shun chaperones. Chaperones are not so much there just to prevent you from having sex. Because we're grown adults. After we come from a chaperone date, and for your listeners who are not in the nation, in the Nation of Islam, when a brother and a sister are courting, the policy is, or the process is, that when they go out on dates, what people consider to be dates or outings, you should have an older married couple. And some people think that that's just to prevent them from holding hands or kissing. But after you go on an outing or a date, and you go back to your, everybody go back to your house. What's stopping you from getting in your car, hooking up with the sister? It's bigger than that. The purpose of that older couple of people who've been married for some years is that it gives this young couple the opportunity to ask them questions, to ask them, what do you all recommend? What do you all suggest? And also because this couple that has been married, before, who is married, they can begin to get us to get our heads out of the clouds and say, hey, I see you all caught up in how he looks so good, he has a good job, but have you asked him this? Have you asked him what is his character like? Have you asked him what is his views on finances? Have you asked him what's his relationship with his mother? What's his relationship with his children if he has them? You know, have you asked, and the older brother may can ask brother, have you asked her about what's her motive to want to be married? Does she want to get married just so she can say, I want to be a stay-at-home wife and this man just can take care of me and I don't want to do anything? Is she looking for somebody just to take care of, or is she looking to be a wife? What's her view on children? Does she want children? What's her view on how children should be reared? See, these are the type of questions that people who are married, there are things that people say like, man, I didn't look at this part, I didn't look at that part. Brother, you may want to look into this, or this is a problem that we ran into. Have y'all thought about this? And that's the benefit. You know, my uncle told me one time, he said, I've lived to be your age. You have not lived to be my age. And that's the same thing with marriage. You have people who've been married 15, 20 years. These people been through something. And if we humble ourselves and see them as a resource, we can begin to start avoiding some of the mistakes that they made. But some of us think that we got it and we don't want nobody in our business. But this is a crazy thing. We don't want nobody in our business. But then when the marriage goes south, now you want everybody here to complain about how low down the dude is, how low down the woman is. But if you would have sought counsel from people early on, you probably could have avoided some of those things.
Right. So, who should we take problems to? Because naturally, in a new relationship or in any relationship, you're going to have problems. So when we have problems, should we take them to family members? Should we take them to friends? Who should we designate to help us with our issues?
Well, one, definitely, we should definitely consult the Word of God and the message that comes from God's servant. Two, mm-hmm. I would suggest we should go to the person that we went to who married us. You know, I've had situations, you have some people, man, that they just want somebody to marry them, but then when they start going through issues, they never go to the person who married them until it's too late, right? And then the other thing is, everybody should have some married couples who we respect, right, who are truly happy and it's not just a show. Even my wife and I, we're over 10 years, we're like going on 16 years of marriage, but there are still couples that meet, even as a minister in the mosque and a grown man with children, that when my wife and I get to a point where we may not see eye to eye, there are couples that we call, and we need to get y'all view on this. So they may mention that they may help me to get a point, understand a perspective or a view of a position, or to see the wrong and the mistake I'm making towards my wife that my wife has been trying to get me to see that I haven't been seen, or vice versa, right? And that's one of the things. So all of us have some couples, or we should have some couples that man, I like them. I can tell, you know, they're real people. They can give us sound advice. And those are some people. And sometimes that can be our own father and mothers if they're still together.
Right. You know, in your book, you have this, it's the beginning of chapter 5. I thought it was very impactful. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I will read this part. One of the spouses, you're talking about how you interviewed couples and how one of them says to you, you know the right one for you because he or she will be able to carry your baggage.
Mm.
Expound on that. And you say you thought that was profound. But some of us are like,
yeah,
man, really baggage. So we all.
That's anybody that knows the Amos Lewis Farrakhan said that there's no perfection in hell. So we all come. You know, the Quran says that we're complete yet incomplete. Then that means that there's some stuff, a part of us that we still have to work on. See, a lot of times the reason why we can't find that right person is that we're not presenting our authentic selves. And I'm just saying, like, when you, well, if that's the benefit of being who we are, where we let people know, these are my strengths and these are my areas that I am working to improve on. And we be honest about it. And if we are honest about it, they have to make that decision to say, you know, I can't deal with that. And if they make that decision and say that they can't deal with that, that doesn't mean that they are a bad person. That just means that they are not the right person for me.
Right.
And that's the purpose. Like, you know, a successful courtship is not you getting married. A successful courtship is that after an analysis of the information that's been presented, we make the right a successful courtship is when we make the best decision for us. If that decision is this is not the person for me, then that courtship was successful, right? But a lot of times, man, we're so uncomfortable with showing people who we truly are that we put on this facade. And then we you know, sometimes sisters will become what they think a brother wants. Or sometimes a brother will try to portray a certain image to a sister that which he really isn't. But just like anybody that wears a mask or wears a costume, at some point we take it off. And then when we take it off, then the person looks at us and is like, man, who are you? But we have to understand that the right person will be able to handle, carry our baggage.
Right. Right person. All
and
right, brother.
That's, if we handle it right, that's how we can know if this is the right person. You know, and I give you, you know, an example. Like a sister, we did a panel discussion. This is some people, they're not in the nation. But this sister have about like 5-6 children, man. But she didn't hide that aspect of her. And she met a brother who was willing to step up to the plate. And he said, sister, you having that amount of children does not bother me.
Hmm. That's interesting, you know, because again, this day and time, and I think we're taught to believe, and we're taught through TV, this and that, that we're not supposed to deal with that. You know what I mean? If you look at Love and Hip Hop or all this other stuff, the music, that's shunned, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're becoming...
What's shunned?
Dealing with anyone with any type of baggage. And we all have it. You know what I mean? But we, this person got this problem, not dealing with that. And we end up by ourselves, jumping from relationship to relationship. How do we make that stop? You know, what is it that we can do to turn that off from our community?
I think what I talk about in the opening chapter of my book, being honest. A lot of us just don't want to be honest. You know, being honest and begin to start, you know, like being honest and stop and understand that everybody's not perfect. You know, I read what a pastor said. He was using an analogy talking about a church. He said, if you found the perfect church, you wouldn't be able to get in because you're not perfect. And it's like, goes back to these principles. In success, when you find, like, successful basketball teams, football teams, businesses, radio programs, there are principles that they abide by. And there are certain principles that if we abide by, we can also have a successful relationship. One, knowing who we are. Two, being honest. Three, you know, really working to improve ourselves and just being our authentic self and understanding that we have to keep developing the skills that will help us to be successful in marriage. Because a lot of times we get to be complacent. Like I often ask people, like, when was the last time you read a book? Like we always say this. How many times you've heard people say, communication is key. That's what's needed to make a marriage successful. I mean, don't you hear that a lot?
All the time.
And when you next time you hear somebody say that, ask them a question, within the last month, what book have you read about, book that you read that can help you to be better at communication? What article have you read? What video have you watched? It's like we talk about these things, but we don't go out and do the preparation that we need that can help us to be successful at it. And that's
right.
Part of the problem as well.
All right. Well, Brother Minister Willie, I really want to thank you for being on the show. Do you have any closing remarks you want to make for me?
No, man, I thank you. I pray that, you know, what I said that your listeners found it to be beneficial. If they want to keep up with the work that we're doing, they can. I would encourage your listeners to subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is called How to Get the Love You Desire, Willie Muhammad. I also have an Instagram title, How to Get the Love You Desire, and also on Twitter as well. So in addition to that, you know, get with me. I encourage you to get my books. I really believe that God has blessed me to put together a book based upon the principle of self-improvement, and I think if people really take it seriously, it would help them to get closer to getting that love that they say that they desire.
And just to add on to that, I'm no expert like this brother, but definitely by reading his book and reading other information, I see that it starts with us, but after it's to us, then it goes to our partner, and we will have an effect on the community. The things we see going on in the world, it's all based on relationships, based on what I observe, especially the relationship we have with the Creator. And once we understand that and we realize how important it is to have successful relationships and seek successful relationships, a lot of the problems we are seeing will change in our communities, especially the Black community. Again, I want to thank you, Brother Minister. I appreciate the work you're doing. I got a comment here that said, if I didn't know he was a Muslim, I would follow him wherever he go. And I encourage you, if you listen to what a message sent to me that said, if I didn't know he was a Muslim, I would follow him wherever he goes. And I say,
you
get rid of the title and you follow him wherever he goes, because the truth is the truth, no matter what you call it. And this brother is teaching the truth. If you heard something today that you agree with that is beneficial for you and the Black community, seek this brother out. Get his book. If you're in the Louisiana area, go to his mosque. Wherever he may be, I say seek him out. We don't know the identity or the beliefs of a lot of our teachers. They don't tell you. They just keep information. But if you heard a lot, you might not be with them. But I tell you, this brother is shown to be a good brother. He's doing a good work. I'm trying to do a good work like him. And he's humble in doing the work, and he's willing to guide us. And we need to get with him. You know, so I appreciate you, Willie. You go ahead and say something.
Thank you. I mean, and I think you said it, man. The book that I've written is you, if you can bear witness that it's not for is a universal book. It's not just for Muslims, it's for anybody who wants to get the love that they desire. You know, so, and I think that's all of us, regardless of what faith tradition we're in or not in.
Next week, same time, we will have Chief Donald Grady. He's been a police chief over 37 years, but he approaches policing very different. He uses a model called integrated policing. He wrote a book called The Injustice of Justice, where he points out the history of the justice system and the history of policing and how policing isn't so kind. And that's what we're seeing today. And he created something called integrated policing, where he uses policing to uplift and build the community, public safety. So for an example, as an example, he says a part of our public safety is if we see individuals hanging out on the street, and as a police officer, which I am, you see individuals hanging out on the street and have nothing to do, that you see them, they're likely to get in trouble. Approach them and see what is going on with them. Maybe they need a job. You know, our public safety is before that problem starts, you correct that problem. You know, prevention over apprehension. So we understand that 89 to 92% of burglaries and thefts and crimes in this country go unsolved. And here we are as police officers looking to wait for them to be called out. And then we go out and play a game of trying to solve it. We know most of them aren't to be solved, but we can prevent them, and we can prevent people from falling into crime. are being a part of their lives and being a part of the community. And it starts with us changing the way we see our community, to changing the way the community sees us, changing what we see our job. Our job isn't law enforcement and policing. That's an aspect of our job. Our job is community service and public safety. So he'll be on next week to talk about that. After that, we have Dr. Ruben West, and we have Dr. Wesley Muhammad coming on. And I'm telling you, this season of the show is going to be awesome. So I want to thank all the listeners today. I want to thank Minister Willie Muhammad. I encourage you to go get his book, To Build Beautiful Relationships. Brother Minister, I thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Amen. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.